My name is Arbutus Sider, and this is a session on adoption. I think the bulletin board listed it as a mother-daughter dialogue on how I met my birth mother. These are not, I don't mean this bulletin board, I mean the one over on the kiosk. These are not both my daughters. And I was sorry I didn't have another opportunity at a dinner meal to make a further announcement and to indicate that Janet Stoner was going to be with us as well. Is this going to be signed? Yeah.
Someone's coming.
Ah.
Maybe.
I can. Shall we wait. Go ahead or wait?
No, we.
We're waiting for someone to sign. I think I can do a little bit of the introduction and without Beth and others missing too much of it. Well, this is my daughter Sonia, and this is Janet Stoner, another adoptive parent. Janet and I are both going to share something of our experiences, and there are some significant differences as well as similarities in our experiences. And then a little later on, I'm going to be interviewing my daughter and detaching as much as possible to be the interviewer and allow her to give her experience of reconnecting with her birth family as well as the whole experience of adoption. Another word of introduction. We are hoping that this session would be especially helpful to any who have been adopted children or those who've been adoptive parents, or to any who might be here who have in their past surrendered a child for adoption. And we're going to use terms like adoptee or adopted child, adoptive parents, and birth parents. Sometimes that's referred to as the adoption triangle. I'm sorry I didn't bring my adoption button along. I have a button that says adoptive parents, birth parents. We are all real parents, and we all love our children.
It's a big button.
It's a big button. We also think, however, that this session can be helpful to other families and individuals where, for some reason or other, a child grows up without the benefit of one or both parents, whether it's because of the death of a parent, because of divorce, single parenting, foster parenting, and so on. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But we're going to start by setting the stage with our brief histories, our family first and then Janet's. My husband, Ron, who is with us, and I adopted our daughter, Sonia, in 1975 when she was 4 months old. We had two biological sons then, Ted and Michael, who at the time were 5 and 7. Sonia is now 16 and her brothers are 22 and 24. Sonia was born in Nicaragua to a 16-year-old girl and a 22-year-old university student. And because this young girl was not yet ready to be a parent, and because her mother, Sonia's grandmother, was working full-time to support her own 6 children, they decided the most loving thing to do would be to surrender her for adoption. You know what I didn't tell you earlier? Excuse me. I had said that if you wanted to sit somewhere else until it's time for me.
Oh, it doesn't matter, so here.
Okay, fine. Sonia's birth mother and grandmother were both part of a Mennonite church there, and because we knew the missionary family there, it was through some friends in that church that we were able to adopt Sonia. We used an agency in Nicaragua, but because we had that church connection, they were glad to have her be raised in a Christian home. Well, that was as much as we knew of Sonia's story until 1984, when our family was attending a church conference in Strasbourg, France. Sonia was 9 at the time. And a delegation from the church in Nicaragua was also present, and the translator for that delegation came to us one day and asked, told us that some of Sonia's relatives were there, and would we like to meet them? I'm going to pick up most of the story at later on and allow Sonia to tell her story, but I just want to summarize by saying that we did have a chance to talk to those relatives at that point, and then 3 years later, in 1987, Sonia and I made our first return trip to Nicaragua. She was 12 at the time, and 2 years later, Sonia and her father, Ron, and I, all three of us made a second trip, and then just this past Easter, Sonia and I made our third visit. But I'm sure you'd rather hear that part of the story from her. So I'm going to let Janet tell you something of their experience in their family, and then we'll come back and have a chance to ask both of them what the experience has been like for them.
Sonia was adopted as a baby. We adopted older children. It sort of came about by my husband and I meeting a college professor in seminary who had adopted a retarded child at the end of their family, and gave us the idea that a good family ought to leave room for someone who does not have a family. So we had that in mind as we started our family. And when we had three children and the youngest was five, we processed with Tressler Lutheran Services for adoption. And since we had two girls and a boy, we thought we would take a young boy and add him to our family. Well, while we were waiting for a placement, Tressler Lutheran Services got an SOS from Texas saying they needed immediate placement for two girls. So they sent a big packet of all the people they had processed out to Texas. And the social workers out there claimed that they read all those biographies, etc., and they came up with the decision that our family was the family that could handle these two girls because they had special needs. So we prayed about it, talked with our children about it, and ended up going to Texas, picking up the two girls and bringing them home in a kind of a three-day visit out there, meeting the last foster family and working with the social workers for 3 days. And then we just packed our girls home at ages 9 and 11.
Are they sisters?
They are half-sisters and grew up together. Same mother, different fathers. And they're the two younger siblings of a family of six. They each have two older brothers and two older sisters back in Texas. A very dysfunctional family they came from, and the older children were all doing very poorly. The social workers hoped that our girls would be saved if they could get out of there and and be in a new situation. Because of the danger of the last stepfather, it was a dangerous situation, we were not able to get in contact with their birth family again until they were grown. Now they are grown, and we're back in contact with the family. Mostly the grandmother, aunts, uncles, and older brothers and sisters, not much with the mother and the stepfather, because that's still difficult. But they have flown in for both of the girls' weddings. Both of our girls are married. Carrie was married in June this year. So they are at this point grown and launched, but we've had quite a time with our girls. I'll tell you more about that later.
How old are they now?
They're now 23 and 25.
And how old, what was the ages of your
birth children.
Okay. Oh, our new children that we added to the family did not change the birth order of any of our children. Our oldest was, our oldest was 12, Carrie was 11, our middle child was 10, and Billy Joe was 9, and Bobby was 5 when we started processing. It took a couple of years, so that he was 7. He was 7 when they actually got here.
So this is a mother who survived having 5 children as teenagers, at the same time.
And
two
that
of
means,
them adopted.
That means many in college at the same time, too.
Were they Hispanic children?
No, they weren't. They have a little Native American blood, but mostly Caucasian.
Is that a good place to stop? Mm-hmm. All right. Good. We're coming back in just a few minutes for a question and answer, more of a discussion time. And then, but before we do that, I'd like to say just a few words. It's my view that the developmental or identity issues that adopted children struggle with are not unlike those of children who, for other reasons, grow up without one or both birth parents present. Children of divorce, for example, whether raised by a single parent or with step-parents, foster children, children where a parent has died, or children raised by gay men or lesbian couples, all these children, just like adopted children, face the task of developing their own personal identity without the benefit of one or both biological parents present. In the past, we have minimized the importance of these biological ties. In fact, in terms of adoption, we have deliberately cut all those ties between child and birth parents, for whatever variety of reasons they are, and always with some legitimacy, the fear of how it would confuse the child, jealousy, a fear of loss. Many problems that are assumed could arise between adoptive and birth parents. What we have underestimated in the past is the loss to the child and the birth parents in the adoption process. One of my professors in family therapy used to say the parent-child relationship, the parent-child bond, is humankind's single unbreakable tie. The parent-child bond is humankind's single unbreakable tie. I would add a kind of parallel to our heavenly parent, to our Creator God. That, too, is an unbreakable tie. And as St. Augustine said, we are created to be, what's the first part of it? Our hearts are restless till they find their rest in God, is the last part of it. And I suppose I would say the same is true to some extent for every child that does not grow up with a biological parent. There's a deep longing that's often pushed below the surface by societal expectations. There's a deep longing to know from whence it is that we came, to find our roots, to experience that kind of belonging as well. I remember when I, as an adoptive parent, first faced this issue head on while I was studying family relationships. Did we make a mistake in adopting Sonia? And indeed, the burden is compounded for the child when she is removed from her culture as well as her home. Have we been more of a hindrance than a help in the long run? What helped me come to terms with that concern were two things. One was realizing the importance of balancing the loss of birth parents on the one hand with the gain of quality care that we were able to provide on the other. Care for a child is also important, as is connection with biological roots. The second thing that helped me was finding a way for Sonia to reconnect with her birth parents and experience her Hispanic culture as well. I'm a firm believer in the concept of both and rather than either or. That in the adoption triangle, all benefit if the children have access to both legacies, as long as the boundaries of responsibility are clear and agreed to by all. When we were first preparing to go to Nicaragua on our first trip, Sonia asked me a very legitimate question. She said, "What if my Nicaraguan mother wants me to stay with her?" And as I remember the answer I gave her, it was something like this: "Sonia, that isn't something you have to worry about. That's not something you need to decide. It's not even something that your Nicaraguan mother can decide. When we adopted you, we promised to take care of you until you were an adult. That's our job, and we'll do it. You will, in a sense, you're stuck with us whether you like it or not. That's our job, and we will have it. You will live with us until you're ready to be on your own. When that time comes, you can choose to live wherever you want to, but not now." And I think that allayed a lot of fears. It just sort of made things very clear and upfront. This is what our responsibility is, and when you are an adult, you will have more choices. But you will be able to make those choices knowing a little bit about that culture and that land as well as ours. Okay, so far I've simply tried to establish that all children, and we have used adoptive children as the example, have an unbreakable tie to their biological parents, and their individual identity development is greatly enhanced if they are able to have access to both of those parents. In divorce, for example, we say, you can divorce each other as parents, but you cannot divorce the children. They need both of you. And please don't put them in a position of having to choose between the two of you. They desperately need permission to love you both. What then is this identity issue we talk about, and why do children benefit from being connected to their biological parents? At one of Michael Ralph's sessions, he said that the development of trust is one of the first relational tasks a child needs to learn. That is the bonding between child and parent, whether it's a birth parent or not. We provide for our children a place of safety. We provide consistent care, and they learn to trust. They have a sense of safety and belonging. That's true for all children, ideally. But eventually, in a healthy, developing child, there comes the urge to move away from that safe nest, to explore the larger world, to see ourselves as separate from one's parent, to establish an identity of one's own. One doesn't do that in a vacuum. That separation process is the result of conscious and unconscious choices that are based on informal lessons we have learned and unspoken rules we have picked up in our families. There are what we called earlier this week powerful family ties that bind us to the past generations. However, adopted children have a more complex agenda when they begin asking those questions, even though they don't ask them out loud. Who am I? Where do I belong? Am I okay? Am I lovable? What do I owe, and to whom do I owe it? What do I deserve for myself? Where can I get it? And in some sense, these are questions we all need to ask. What relationships do I need and do I want? What relationships am I obligated to keep, whether I want them or not? Those are especially parental kinds of questions we ask ourselves. Well, for adopted children, there are two powerful points of connection. Those loyalty ties are real for both birth and adoptive parents, even if they're not thought about consciously. The challenge is, what to do with both of those tugs, how to work out the dual loyalty. And fortunate is the adopted child whose parents at this point of identity formation can support them in that who am I search. I want to just summarize then what I think is important in terms of supporting a child in their search. I think I would summarize it with two words: truth-telling and unconditional love. First, an openness to the truth. Be honest with your child. Tell them their story, as much of it as you know, and give your permission, verbally and non-verbally, to ask all the questions they may have. Secrecy suggests there is something to hide, and hiddenness suggests shame. So let the truth set you free. Someone has said the truth will set you free even if it first makes you miserable. And that is often the case. Finally, unconditional love. All children need it, but especially those who have divided loyalties. It takes work to remain emotionally stable while our children's emotions go up and down. One day they feel like being close to us, and the next day they feel like leaving us forever. Mm-hmm. That's when our maturity is put to the test. We will best help them if we can stay in the middle. Just a word for families where reconnection with birth parents does not seem a possibility. I think the message is the same. We'll help you find out as much as you'd like to know, as much as is possible. And if the process is scary to a parent, admit that. I'm afraid. I'm afraid I might lose you. I'm afraid you won't love me anymore when you meet your birth family. Because your vulnerability will draw the child close to you. It's more likely that the ties will be strengthened, but there are no guarantees as to what will happen. All right, we haven't talked about open adoptions either, or the legal details if birth parents in birth parent searches. I decided, instead of talking about that, to write up here for anybody who may be interested on the chalkboard the names of adoption agencies where you could get more information. The first one, for example, the American Adoption Congress, has an annual conference where people from around the country come. Adoptive Parents for Open Records have a lot of very good literature to give information on how to find the records you need to help you in that process. Number three, Council for Equal Rights in Adoption is a kind of action-oriented group for the civil rights of adopted children and birth parents. And finally, number four, Catholics for Open Records is a church-related group that works at this. Question?
Not a question, just a statement. I've been working with search and reunion of adoptees and birth parents for 10 years, so I'd be happy to serve as a resource for anyone interested in more information
about
that.
Thank you very much. Any other input right at this point before we go back to questions and answers? Okay, then let's move into the next part. I'm going to ask Sonia some questions about her experience as an adopted child, and then I'm sure you may have some questions, and I have a few others for Janet as well. Thanks for sitting here and waiting all this time.
Fine.
You had to wait a long time. Well, do you want to begin just with some thoughts and feelings about what it's like being adopted? What are some good things about that, and what are some hard things about being adopted?
Well, I guess you could say Nicaragua is a very poor country. I mean, the economic situation is really bad there. So I think one good thing is I was adopted to a family here, and I have better opportunities and better education here. That's a good thing. And I was adopted to a Christian home, which is something I'm thankful for. And I love my family very much. They're very supportive of me, very supportive.
I really didn't tell her what she had to say in this, I assure you.
But I can say some negative things. Like, as I was growing up, I started noticing I was different. I mean, my color of my skin, my hair, I was, like, different from my family, because everyone in my family basically has, like, blonde hair and blue eyes, just like my father. So I was just like, oh, man, you know, I'm different. And so that was a hard thing. I was really embarrassed about that for a while, because we go to Canada every Christmas. And my relatives there are all white, and I was like the only brown person there. I was like, okay. So that was one thing that bothered me. But and I was really, actually, I was really ashamed of being Nicaraguan and as of my color too. I really wanted to be white, and I always thought the white was the better color to be. But as I was growing up, I started realizing that, I guess, what really changed is when I went to Nicaragua to see my natural family, I realized that I had something to be proud of with my heritage, being Nicaraguan, being Hispanic, it's something to be proud of. And
what do you think was the hardest time? Which years do you think were the hardest ones for
probably
you?
Probably between the ages of 7 and 10 were the hardest years for me, because you're starting to grow up, you start realizing, start understanding things.
I remember it was hard for me when Sonia once said that it was difficult for her to be seen walking down the street with a little white mother, which I can thoroughly understand. But we've gotten beyond that.
Yeah, it's okay. It's fine.
What was it like to go back to Nicaragua and meet your birth parents? What was good and what was hard about that? Do you want to say a little bit about that, Mary?
I guess the first time was very scary because I didn't know what to expect. I mean, I had no idea what to expect because I was going to see my natural family. And I was very excited, but also very, very scared. I was very scared. But it was also a very emotional moment to like meet your natural parents. But I guess some negative things were bad. It was because everyone's really poor in Nicaragua. And I always thought that my relatives would use me, actually, I don't know, but use me just because I was American and for my money and stuff, because there's problems, because a lot of people think that, like, America, living in America is a better place than where they live, because they think everyone's going to be rich and stuff when they come here, which is not true.
Maybe I'll just add one thing that was helpful to me on that first trip. People in the family in Nicaragua was just exceedingly warm and welcoming and hospitable. We've been there 3 times, and every time about a dozen people come to the airport to visit, to meet us. Mm-hmm. And that first time we were just engulfed with lots of warm hugs, and we did very well in spite of our language difference.
After you speak, do you speak
no,
Spanish?
Neither one of us speaks Spanish, and that first time we went...
I speak a little bit now.
Now.
I have 2 years of Spanish.
But we had translators most of the time, but not all the time. And what helped me was to build a family tree, a genogram, while we were there. And every time we met a new relative, we'd find out how they fit into the family and put them on the family tree. And that was a very good cross-cultural link. In fact, by the time we left that first, after those first week and a half, I think it was, we had met over 60 relatives of her family, so that she had this genogram now in the Philadelphia and an even larger one in Nicaragua, which shows something that's a symbol to me of the dual identity you need to work out. Okay, what do you have a happiest memory of a time in Nicaragua?
Basically, being with my mother, because my mother lives in Nicaragua, my father lives in Miami, Florida. But I guess just spending time with her and getting to know my brothers and sisters and my relatives was, I guess that was like the happiest time, or the best time, just relating to people.
Do you remember any time when you were particularly upset? Maybe you've talked about that already in
yeah,
the discomfort with whether you would be
yeah,
exploited.
Yeah.
Can you talk about your feelings of about, let's say your father, for example, the first time you met your birth father in Miami, Florida, at the airport where we weren't even sure we'd recognize him? Remember what that was like?
It was also scary. I didn't know what to expect. And when I met my mom, she like grabbed me and like hugged me for like the longest time with him. It was just kind of like a handshake, and I was glad for that because, I don't know, it's just different.
Is there a relationship between your birth father and your birth mother now?
No, not at all, no.
Okay.
No.
So he has another family or...
Actually,
they both do.
They both have different families. Okay. Yeah. but that was good.
Any differences in the first visit and the second and the third? What changed as you went back?
Well, I guess the first time I went, I didn't really know what to expect because it was my first time, but probably the third time was the best time for me because I was able to speak a little bit of Spanish and I was able to speak to my relatives, and that was like good because I got really anxious because I couldn't say what I wanted to say, and I just, we had like this Spanish-English dictionary, but that wasn't very good because you can't really pick out words in the dictionary trying to explain how you feel and stuff. But what was I saying?
Well, do you have any plans for future meetings with your parents, your birth parents?
I probably will continue going back to Nicaragua as long as I can. I want to go back and be with my family there.
You want to talk about what's going to happen next year, hopefully?
My mother, my natural mother, and one of my uncles are coming for my graduation. Mm-hmm. Next year we're going to send them plane tickets to come and visit me for my graduation. So, nice.
Do you have anything else you'd like to say just in general to other families where there may be adopted children? Who may be thinking about meeting their birth parents? I mean, our story is a pretty happy one.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you want to meet your natural parents, I mean, it's not always going to be a happy story. I mean, you're going to have to deal with some disappointment because it might not be a good experience at all. But it just happened that ours was, like, pretty amazing. So, and also, I wish I would have learned Spanish from, like, since I was a little kid because I just think it would have been better if I could have like spoken Spanish. So I think like if you happen to adopt somebody from Latin America, if you possibly can, like, are able to teach them Spanish, I'd do it. I mean, if you have the money and if the opportunity is there, I'd do it. But
I think that's the thing.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not something you have to do. I mean, that's just something I wish would have happened, but that's okay because I'm learning in school.
Mm-hmm. I think that's probably the thing we would try hard to do differently if we could start over again. Mm-hmm. Question.
Learning your birth parents' language, is that a connection to that country for you, or is that a means of communication and you wish you would have known it right away?
I just wish I would have been able to know it right away.
For communication?
Just for communication with like other Hispanics. Like, just so I could speak to them, and also just to be able to speak to my parents, too. I just wish I would have been able to know my own language, you know, Spanish.
But there was another question.
I'm an adopted parent, Hispanic child, and somebody advised me one time that it would be very confusing for him to learn Spanish.
Uh-huh.
And to deal with that. Yeah. We were thinking about sending him to an escuela, alternative school. Uh-huh.
Well, I don't really know because I don't know, like, I didn't learn it since I was a kid, so I don't know if it would have been confusing. But you can learn it like in high school, like you can learn it in high school or even like in elementary, like junior high. Yeah. Yeah.
Why did they think it would be confusing?
It would be identifying. He was just, I guess, if he was driving, he was six and he was trying to identify.
Uh-huh.
With us as Caucasian parents.
Right.
So it wasn't that it would be confusing to learn English and Spanish at the same time.
It would be confusing for his identity.
For his identity.
Yeah, like knowing where he belongs, like Hispanic culture or white.
Do you think if you would have had someone to teach you at six, what would...
I don't, knowing me, I'd probably... I don't think I'd be confused. Because, I mean, I still think of you as my parents, because, I mean, since I was a baby, I'd just be learning, like, another language, I guess.
It would be different than your friends who weren't adopted. I mean,
it would highlight the difference.
Yeah, it highlights the difference, and I think it might be more scary to a little kid, you know, obviously than to a teenager.
Right. Sonia lives in the city where there are a lot of Spanish and black and other kinds of people with her that she could use the Spanish. Your situation is not that.
Well, Seattle, I don't have a connection with the Hispanic culture there.
Mm.
Somewhere back here, there was someone who wanted to enter in.
I have one.
I'm not sure. There was someone who had started. Was it?
I started.
Oh, you did? Okay, no. All right, well, then go ahead, and then I'll come up there. Yes.
It's just interesting what you were saying earlier about feeling different growing up.
Mm.
And I'm a parent of an adopted black child. One of the things I'm looking at is bringing another black child into the
family.
Do you have any feelings about whether that would have made it easier for you? Or, I mean, maybe that's not a fair question,
sure.
But it's certainly
a... Do you wish you would have had a sister or brother who's Hispanic as well?
I probably crossed my mind just some, but I mean, it's not... No, I don't think it bothered me too much, no.
That was our original intention.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen.
My question was, would it have eased some of that feeling of difference, or do you have any sense of that?
Probably. Probably would have eased some, but I didn't have any great pain or anything about it. But
makes sense, though.
Yeah.
Do you think it helped your sisters to have each other?
Definitely. I think it helped them to have someone else who was adopted, since there were three homemade children, as we call them, in our family. We felt that our two adopted girls had somebody that was like them in some way in the family, and that was very helpful.
And Sonia had friends at school, which she didn't have when we went to visit relatives in Canada. So it was probably not as difficult when you were in school with Damari and Malika.
Mm-hmm.
Now, up there first.
I just want to go a little farther with the language thing. Is it helpful or advisable to learn, if you adopt a child of another culture, to learn about their culture and try to incorporate some of that culture into your own lifestyle? Or is that confusing?
Well, I'd probably say, like, start doing that when they're, like, around 12, 13, 14, when they can decide if they want to get to do that,
mm-hmm.
you know? But maybe not when they're younger, when they're adjusting to you and your family,
mm-hmm.
you know? It might be a bit confusing to do and things, but, yeah.
I know anything that happened in Nicaragua was always of special interest to us.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the country that we know more about. The foreign affairs of the U.S. and Nicaragua than any other one. I remember where we were in 1979 when the revolution took place. In fact, we were on our way to Holden, right, on a cross-country camping trip. And so I'm sure Sonia heard us talk lots about it, but we didn't make any, we didn't set her down for a culture lesson or whatever.
No.
We didn't.
I'm
thinking of the little things, like at Christmas time,
yes.
My family has a Norwegian heritage,
yes.
So we do a lot of little Norwegian type of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Our girls were older and had Southern culture.
Hmm.
We tried to incorporate a little bit of that. And two of the sayings in our family that the rest of us use now is y'all.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm fixing to do something. So. We just like those, and that's the way they talked, and so we got that from them. And Texas also is the other important state in the United States for our family, other than Pennsylvania. We watch the weather patterns there, and anything that happens in Texas is more important than if it happens even in Minnesota.
I'm sure we could have done more of that if we had wanted to. I wanted to ask Janet, is that why you picked up that rock in the shape of Texas?
Sure.
Today?
Sure.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Up in the tailings, there was a flat rock, kind of in the shape of Texas. And that's the one I'm taking home.
I'm going to stop for a moment, questions out there, and switch again to a few more questions for Janet, and then you can direct them again to either one. Janet, would you like to say a little bit about bonding when the children you adopt are older? Sonia was 4 months, yours were older.
For John and I, to bond with our children was not a problem because we had decided that whoever our children were, we were committed to them. It's a little harder for children who are older to bond with their parents, and that's taken a number of years. As adults now, we feel good about where they are, and we are the parents that are there for them as young adults and young married people. And they call us on the phone and so forth and come over and invite us to their houses. But that took a long time for older kids to bond with us.
Like and they,
long? Well, they, 10 years, you know, gradually. You know, it's not something that's a clear-cut thing. They depended on us. They came home for dinner and so forth most of that time. Well, one of them did. We had one very difficult daughter, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that later, but the bonding is more difficult.
Mm-hmm. What have you learned from the experience, or what advice or what encouragement would you give to other parents? You've gone through a lot of tough times. You've learned a lot.
When Arvita talked to me about sharing here, I thought of things that helped carry me through the very difficult times. We had a good orientation with Trust Lutheran Services. And one of the things they said there before we even got our girls was, don't feel guilty if you don't love your child. Just do the best you can to act love to that child. And that's part of the bonding thing. And it comes. But when you, sometimes some of your biological children will do the same. Say, I hate you so bad. And I never wanted you to be my mother anyway, and this kind of thing. And you have to stay steady and say, yes, but I care about you, and you still have to do the dishes. So that's one thing. Another one that we dealt with our very difficult situation was that we as parents could not, we had to come to the point that maybe we could not do and give all that this child needed ourselves. And that was a very bitter thing. We worked so hard to just find what it was going to take to bring this child through. And a psychologist, two different ones, told us, till we got the message, told us, maybe you won't be able to do all this for Billy Joe. And we had to give up trying to be all things for her and make things right for her. And they've come around a long ways around since we had to give that up. But that's something that I think is important to remember, that you cannot always be for your child everything that they might need. And then there's the genetic differences that are going to be there. Your own children may go off and have different interests and so forth than you, but when you have a adopted child, their genetic differences are going to be completely different from yours. And we are happy now to expect our children to be who they are in their genetic mix. It was interesting, when one of our children went to college, we met another adoptive family who had been working class. Nobody in the family had ever gone to college. And they adopted this little girl and found out she was very bright. And they were now having to break into the college scene for the sake of their daughter, who was genetically different from them. And they were doing this for their daughter, even though they weren't real comfortable there. And that can happen. The other thing can happen, that a very highly educated family can have a child who has a different set of abilities, and they should feel comfortable with tracking them where the child needs to be and not try to make them into the same genetic mix as themselves.
Well, and you add the experiential mix in with an older child, too.
Oh, yes.
I mean,
yes.
I think that would be even more of an issue.
Well, I've come down to the genetic mix being very powerful because of our youngest adoptive daughter being in our situation for a long time and acting out just like the grandmother. The grandmother had her first child when she was 14. The mother had her first child when she was 14. The older sisters had their first children when they were 14 and 15. So our daughter had her first child when she was 16. So we figured we maybe saved her 2 years. But she had that drive.
But she was how old when?
She was 9. She was 9 and she knew that. But she had opportunity to be different. Yeah.
So. Do you want to say more about your point?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's both. It's both, especially with the older children.
Actually, I think that different genetic mix can add an awful lot of richness. One of the things that Sonia has brought is an artistic flavor to our home that none of the rest of us had, and I really appreciate that in our home.
Our children as well have given us positive things that
they wouldn't, that you wouldn't have had otherwise. Mm-hmm. Well, you said you were going to go back and perhaps tell a little bit more about one experience. I'm not sure. Maybe we could put it under the question of whether troubled children inevitably have to become troubled adults, or we hear a lot about dysfunctional families and the effects of those families on children. Do you have some examples of the rewards of hanging in there, of acting love, even in the hard times?
I felt like one of my messages to parents who have difficult children is to hang in there, because growing up is often very tough for a child who has been abused and battered. And we have seen our girls come through to being coming through that. You know, we had the bailing them out of jail, and the drugs and alcohol and the sex and so forth, and not knowing where she was for periods of time. And it was horrendous to go through. But now our most difficult daughter is married. Her husband has adopted her first child that was at our house and was raised for the first 5 years of her life. And she has another little girl. And just this Easter, John and I looked at each other again, and she called us up and asked us to come to her church on Easter Sunday because she was singing in the choir and they were doing a special cantata where, you know, church was a no-no. And from age 14, we couldn't even get her to go to church. And, you know, we're just kind of thrilled now that she has come kind of full circle. And she's learning some skills on her own. She does cake decorating. And she's an interesting and fairly stable person, although she has some tendencies toward addictiveness. She's working at it very well now, and we could not have foreseen that. So I'm telling you that if you have a hard time, just hang in there.
Like more questions now, and maybe a little bit later on too, Ron, if you have any thoughts of things that you would like to add, please feel free to do that question.
I'm an adopted parent, and we adopted a child that we had as a foster son. And so, you know, he has basically been with us since he was little. But anyway, he is 17 now, and he has asked, you know, years before this about meeting his natural parents. And being he wasn't a foster son, we do know his natural parents. We know the grandparents, we know the aunts and uncles, and all this sort of thing. And when he doesn't know them or remember them from the adoption when he was four. But we, and we have always told him, yes, he can meet them, you know, that would be fine. But we have said we would contact the, we did it through the county, you know, welfare, being he was a foster child, that they would want to meet him too. And the fact that we want him to be older, we want him to be, you know, like at least 21. Because we have heard that sometimes it isn't a happy situation, and that when a child does meet their natural parents, if it isn't good, it is so devastating that some of them really have years of trouble. And Corrine Schilscher, I think she's writing a book on this, on the fact, because they have adopted children. One of their children committed suicide, and another child didn't meet their natural parents. It was not a good situation, and they had years of counseling. And so this is a very hard thing as an adopted parent to advise your child as to what is going to be the good time. I mean, you did this early and it all worked out. But I mean, it's a hard time to figure out sometimes when you want your child to be mature enough so if it doesn't go right, that they would be able to handle it.
Yes, I wondered if you would please come in. Yes.
I've seen many reunions a month for, let's say, almost 10 years now. Washington Adoptees Rights keeps statistics on reunions. Oregon Adoptees Rights, of which I am a part, does not. But Washington says that anywhere between 92 and 96% of their reunions are successful. And this is what has always led me to believe that it's a fairly safe move to make.
What do you mean by successful?
Successful is that the birth parent, if they are the one, if the adopted person is making contact with the birth parent acknowledges, yes, I am the birth parent, and that's a success. Anything beyond that makes it even better, of course, if there is a relationship established. But a success is that you do not deny or say, I don't have anything to do with you. Just background, I have a daughter who is now 24, a son who is 22. They were both adopted as infants. The daughter was, I identify with everything you have said, which is what led me to become involved with Adoptees' Rights in the first place. Our daughter has since relinquished two children for adoption. In an open adoption situation, they're both with the same family. But it was fairly radical when I started doing the search. I took our son to meet his birth mother at age 14, and our daughter met her birth mother at age 16. They did acknowledge that they, by our terms, they were successful in that both acknowledged. Our son to this day has a relationship with his birth mother. Like when you get married and you meet your in-laws for the first time, some you like and some you don't. It always gets off to a good start, but where it goes from there is different. As I say, our son started out very enthusiastically, they wrote very regularly, and then it tapered off. Now it's maybe Christmas that they exchange letters. Our daughter's reunion was also successful with her birth mother, but it was only 3 months after their meeting that our daughter was found to be pregnant for the first time. And her birth mother at that point rejected her. She said, it's a nightmare revisited, was her words. And she said, I cannot stand it. And so we're talking 7 years now that they have not spoken. But I keep track of her birth grandmother, and the longer I do that and the more I know, the more I see the similarities and so on. The genetic aspect, to me, it's 90% of the story from what I have seen.
I think parents have a great responsibility, adoptive parents, in that process of reconnecting, and they have the responsibility to care for them, to protect them as much as possible. I have no idea what happened in the situations you're talking about. And again, I think even there it's important for parents not to feel guilty if something as tragic as what you mentioned. I don't think that means that the openness to meeting birth parents is wrong or a mistake, but we are as careful as we can. I think you open a door, and if it doesn't look like the right time to open it, as soon as you're aware of that, you allow it to close again and look for the next opportunity.
Just a suggestion, you might want to try writing through an intermediary, your son to his birth parent and so on, to get acquainted with letters.
Mm-hmm. Well, he hasn't said, I mean, he doesn't bring this up very often. I mean, once in a while, he'll say, you know, something about him, and I've always told him, you know, maybe you should be, you know, we'll do it, you know, in time, and we'll contact the agency to see if they want to. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because then as soon as, you know, we've given them the okay, yes, right. You know, we're going to do this. Right. It may not be this week or next week or next year, but we will do this. And the next thing he said to me was, will you go with me?
Yes, absolutely. Which is one of the things that's nice about doing it early, because you have a lot more of the responsibility, the control. If you turn it back to him and ask him, when do you think is the right time? What does he say?
And we have announced him that, but I have told him this: he was a foster son, and the parents, you know, visited for a time. Grandparents visited, uncles and aunts visited, this and that. And we went. We took him to see them. I mean, it was back and forth type of thing. This was a rare situation, because usually when you're a foster parent, the natural parents can be very rude, very mean, very terrible, but this was not that way. And I'm sure they know that we adopted him when rights were terminated, because I'm sure they assumed in their minds that we did this, but so the agency did not tell them that. And I have told my son, I said, someday your mother or dad may be at the bar just to see what you look like when you're 17. And because they know where we live. I mean, we've always lived there. And that's something that, so that he wouldn't be afraid of that. And I have never feared that. I've never feared that they would come to want him back. But the fact, I said, you know, I've told him, your mother or your dad may appear at the door just to see you. And he said, okay. I mean...
Mm-hmm. Has he ever seen the book How It Feels to Be Adopted?
Oh, we read lots of books together.
This is a picture book. There's a different person on each page. There's a photo of them and then their story. Mm-hmm. And there's everywhere from little ones up through late teens. Really a neat book, because it presents many, many results of search and reunion.
I did tell him a couple of years ago he was in good company, though, because Moses was adopted.
Uh-huh. Okay. We have two more people over here.
There are some liturgies in the church now for adopted parents and children to use in the context of worship. And we use them in our church, and they've been very, very well received and meaningful to people who have had no contact with adoption before. Sometimes we've used them at baptism, at the baptism time, and sometimes when the children are older, we have used it in the context of affirming this family as a family. And the theological basis is, you know, we are all adopted, right, as sons and daughters of God. Mm-hmm. And it really has an impact that, okay, here's something that this adopted child and these adopted parents have to witness to, that can be a witness for the entire congregation of what it means to love.
Yeah.
So I think, I mean, this is, it's really neat to hear you all speak out, because I think that even for those of us who haven't had the experience of adoption, it gives us a clearer picture of what it means to be a community of faith and a family of faith.
Okay, thank you. Yes, behind you.
I'm only an adopted parent of 8 months, and I have 1,000 questions, but one in particular is just around the aspect of openness, and wondering, is it possible to be too open? I have a nine-year-old who's a birth child who's very open about the fact that his sister's adopted. In fact, many of you have met either, so you probably know our life history. Karen calls everyone Katie is adopted, she's from Haiti, and so it just, I mean, it's pretty obvious Katie is from somewhere else because she's so black. But is it possible to be too open, to talk too much about it in front of children?
How would you know whether there's too much? What are you worried about anything in particular?
Yeah, it just needs to be, I feel like we never get away from it. It's pretty important that my other child talk about it alone.
Right. Are you wanting to get away from it, or are the children wanting? Who wants to get away from it? Who's feeling there's too much?